Chen Rob McGregor welcome you to a place where all kinds of phenomena flourish. Voices whisper, ancient secrets, signs and symbols are abundant. UFOs, ETs, ghosts, and even the dead move about freely. Here we meet authors, researchers, and investigators of the mysterious, the strange, and of the inexplicable anomalies that surround us. Step out of the everyday world and take a journey into the mystical underground.
Welcome to the Mystical Underground. Thank you for joining us. This is Rob McGregor
and Trish McGregor.
And our producer and tech magician, John Posey. You can go to themysticalunderground.com where we make regular blog posts and where you can find out about our books. Among them are Phenomena, Harnessing Your Psychic Abilities, The Secrets of Spirit Communication, Sensing the Future, and Aliens in the Backyard. Our latest book is called Mind-Blowing Synchronicities, The Latest Science Stories and Research. Trish's latest novel is White Crows. Rob's most recent novel is called Tulpas, Story of Mysterious Beings Created Through Deep Meditation. If you're watching us on YouTube, we would appreciate it if you would take a second to click the like, subscribe, and notification buttons so you never miss an episode. If you prefer to listen to the show, it's available wherever you listen to podcasts. Please subscribe there.
Okay, Rhiannon Hines. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's Rhiannon Hines. So okay, Rhiannon isn't common in the U.S., I've noticed.
No, it isn't. It's a pretty name. Different. She's an intuitive channel author and energy worker. She's also a yoga and meditation instructor and teaches online training signatures in her sessions. In her signature intuitive rebirth energy work method. Rhiannon is the author of The Keepers of the Light Codes, and her most recent book is The Intuitive Rebirth. Her mission, she says, is to empower healers and seekers to unlock their miraculous power by facing the very darkness they've spent lifetimes avoiding. Welcome. It's so nice to have you. And I know it's 8 a.m. for you. I'm sorry.
No, it's so great to be here. And 8 a.m. is I'm well and truly in my day, so it's no problem at all. Thanks for having me.
You've described a powerful moment where you stopped resisting fear and chose to love it instead. Can you take us back to that night and share what shifted in you on a cellular level?
Yeah. So much of my work as a healer and an energy worker and a teacher of a modality that I've called intuitive rebirth is around just knowing that everything that we've resisted gives us an opportunity to expand. So fear is number one, what we resist in this world, right? We have all of these crazy things happening in the world. We have wars. We have, as we've discussed by email, Trish, crazy politicians.
Right.
There's a lot out there that can produce a fear response within our body. And everything that produces a fear response in our body gives us an opportunity to expand into more love. And when we expand into more love, we become more connected to our truth, more connected to psychic energies, more connected to living our most beautiful life. And when I was teaching one of my practitioner trainings in Bali, so I've spent a lot of time teaching 7-day practitioner training retreats. And in these retreats, there's so much love and there's so much connection that the deepest fears that people have had within their body, they start to rise to the surface. So it's what we see happening in these spaces is wild, you know, from real life demons being brought forward from people's bodies. And this is beautiful.
Jeez.
Beautiful human. Yeah, beautiful people, like, you know, to the deepest traumas. And it's all done with effortless grace because love is the medicine. But there was one time that these two partners were working on one another. So this is in a modality that I've trained them in and they're practicing, and it goes real deep, real deep. And one of the the women who was doing this session on this beautiful guy, she came up to me and she said, Ariannan, I won't use his name, but he's not responding. He's unconscious. And I was like, what? He's unconscious. And then, whoa, my body fills with fear because I'm like, holy moly, I'm doing this retreat. I'm teaching everyone. Whatever I'm teaching has made someone go unconscious. So my body starts, and I don't know if you've ever felt immense fear. It's like, boom, 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 boom. It's like your whole body like pulses with this fear. And that's what took over me. So I went and sat where this guy was laying and I was like, you know, tapped him and I was like, said his name. I was like, are you there? Are you there? And yeah, nothing. Silence. I was like, could you squeeze my hand? Nothing. But there, his breath was flowing. He was breathing.
Were his eyes open?
Okay, well, his eyes were not open. Okay. His breath was flowing like very, very slowly. And there was no response like on any level.
God.
So then my heart, ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-boom. And this girl next to me who had done this session, I could feel her, ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-boom. And I was like, okay, well, if love is where alchemy lives, whatever this is, whatever her and I are sharing right now is not it. So I said to her, you just need to close your eyes and you need to just breathe into your heart. And so then I closed my eyes. And through the fear, I just found that connection with my heart. And I just breathed there for as long as it took for that pulse to change to an expansive energy. And then I just said what I always say when I don't know what to do in these crazy energy work situations. I said, show me what to do, you know, show me what to do. And then my guide said, just go there, go where he is. Go where he is. And I just allowed myself to sort of merge to become one with his experience. And it was pure white. It was pure divinity. It was pure love. And then I just allowed myself to be there with him. And it was, I just stayed there for as long as I needed to. And then all of a sudden I was dropped back into this reality. I opened my eyes. His eyes opened and he goes, oh my God, that was awesome.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he had to go into this. He had a rebirth. He died. He had an actual an ego death. You know, he had to die in the sense of self. And yeah, that's the medicine. It's the trust.
Wow.
The
so you, so in a sense, you had a relationship with fear that you turned into love.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah,
and that is the metaphor for what we need to do in this collective, in everything that we're faced with. It's just like remembering that love is the medicine for this earth.
But suppose the other people don't know that.
Yeah, other people don't know that, but that's my mission, I guess, Trish. Okay. That's what I'm here to share on my retreats and in my books. It's just the power of love, and not like an outrageous love, not something that we can't achieve, just the simplicity of allowing and being with our hearts, which we can all do.
Hmm.
But you also talk a lot in your book about finding your true self and finding your true path, and that most people are kind of stuck in their same mold of a job that they don't like so they can pay their mortgage, pay their bills. And there's a fear factor there of leaving that job because of what might happen. But you write a lot about this, about taking that step. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, we're all here to live a life in deep alignment with our truth and with our mission, and how that looks for one person is radically different for another. I know that you guys love to write. I love to write. And when we write, we feel really like inspired, creative, connected. For other people, that's gardening. You know, my husband loves being in the garden. And
that's great.
He feels alive, connected, inspired. And we all have something that makes us feel that. And we actually know it when we're children. I used to write poems when I was a child. When I was a teenager, I would write so much poetry. And then all of a sudden, we start to make decisions that are based upon the societal mold, ticking all the boxes, house, mortgage, marriage, good job. And we start ticking societal expectations instead of asking ourselves, what do I really want to do right now? And because our school systems are set up that, you know, what you want to do is not important. That's what you have to do. What right. you want to do is not important. So we go through this like 12 years of intense programming that teaches us that what we love to do and what we want to do isn't important. So when we're adults, then we go out into the world and we just, then I guess, just tick all these boxes, just tick all the boxes. And then all of a sudden that gets to a point where it's like, is this it? Is this it?
What you're describing is what happened to our daughter. She's now in love with a job where she works with whales out in Washington State. I mean, that is her passion.
That's so beautiful. And I think when we ask the question, is there more, even if you don't believe in a God or the divine or a higher power, when you ask the question, is there more? You're asking the question to something. And something then listens and responds. That curiosity sparks a response. And all of a sudden, your whole life starts to bend and move and shape in a way that will show you that, there is more.
Right.
Like your daughter probably opened to this curiosity, you know, like there's got to be something more.
She saw Free Willy, the movie. That did it.
Yeah. Oh, so beautiful. And then she would have been on the receiving end of synchronicities, experiences.
Oh, yeah. She went out to the West Coast with a friend or two, and they went out on a whale watching tour, and she saw these people her age leading these tours, and said, how did you get this job? And she'd already worked with dolphins at Disney World. And so she had some experience, and she decided to apply, and she ended up getting the job. So
this is her second year.
Amazing. Yeah. Yeah. But at some point, she would have had to do something that was uncomfortable. At some point when she applied for that job, her fears would have come up, you know, am I good enough? Am I worthy? And it's that bit that people don't do.
Yeah. She had a drive from South Florida to Northern Washington, you know, across the country by herself.
With her dog.
With her dog, yeah.
And it's like the hero's journey. We're all living our own incredible movie, you know, and we've got to find the courage to walk through the fear, and then there's the gift, there's the mission. It's like we're all living this incredible, beautiful dream if we have the courage,
right?
And to make it happen.
Yeah, and when she reached the Pacific Ocean finally, after a couple of weeks of driving, I mean, she was taking her time. You know, she just broke down in tears, you know, on the beach, you know, because she had reached the Pacific.
Yeah, so that's amazing. That, yeah. I'm so happy for her. Yeah.
So tell
I'll send you some videos. You'll love them.
Yeah. So tell us about your journey. I mean, you were kind of stuck in a mold yourself, weren't you? With job and duties, the life checking out of the boxes, and then one day something happened, right?
Yeah. Well, it's literally everything that I just described, but where I'm lucky is that I had my realization where I started asking those questions at a really young age. I was 22. So my period of forgetting who I was short, but it was intense and it was uncomfortable. But like I've been a chronic high achiever, like all through high school, an absolute high achiever, because I was like academic and I wanted to get good grades. And I wanted to perform. I wanted to make my teachers pleased. I wanted to make especially my dad pleased, even though he didn't care. My dad's super easygoing. But I wanted to please everyone. I was a people pleaser and a high achiever. So my high achieving went on to, you know, buying a house as early as I could and getting like a corporate job and, you know, getting engaged to a guy that I did love. He was like my best friend. I loved to the capacity that I knew love at the time. And And I had done it all. There was only one box that I hadn't ticked, which was to get pregnant and have a baby. So I was 22 and I had ticked pretty much every box that I perceived to be life's achievements. And I was deeply numb to my pain, because it's our pain and our discomfort in our life that tells us that something needs to change. Mm-hmm. And I had perpetually numbed myself through watching TV, going out and getting drunk with my friends on the weekend, being on my phone, like just numbing activities. I was perpetually numb. So in order to feel the wisdom of my body, like, pushed up a lot of emotion, and it came in the form of intense anxiety. Like my intense anxiety, like if I was cooking dinner, my hands would be shaking.
Jeez.
And then I would just be crying. And I had to feel that deeply because I had numbed myself that much. And that was when I started to ask those golden questions of like, is there something more? Like, can someone please help me out here? Because I'm suffering. And there was more. And I don't know if you guys know who Leonard Cohen is.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah, so Leonard Cohen. Yeah, Leonard Cohen was my dad's favorite musician, right? So I grew up listening to Leonard Cohen. So I was, as a child, I remember like not being impressed with dad's music. I have an appreciation now for my dad's taste. Right. But they had this big painting of like a really cool painting of Leonard Cohen, right? Uh-huh. And they were moving house, my mum and dad. So they asked if I could just keep this piece of art in our house while they were moving. And I remember at one point being really low, like on the floor, like crying. And I looked up at Leonard Cohen and... yeah, I don't know if you guys know his song, The Anthem. And it goes, there is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. And I remember like looking at this painting of this musician I was not impressed with and hearing the music of my childhood that my dad played, like playing through my mind. And I had this realization, like, it's okay. Like, this needs to happen. It all needs to fall apart because the light is coming in. And then I just kind of gave up and I just, whatever. I give over. And it was a very powerful thing to do because then I started to flow. I wanted to break up with the fiance, so I did. I wanted to get a new job, so I did. And life just started to get better and better and better with the synchronicities, the divine alignments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those synchronicities, when they happen, when you're in that kind of state, are always powerful. They're confirmation. You know?
Yeah, so you talked about walking straight into the fire of fear. So what practices now help you stay anchored in love with when everything in your body wants to flee in certain situations?
Yeah, well, the number one practice is more of a knowing that fear is an opportunity to expand.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. So most of us try to resist fear. So if like I circle back to when I was young and I was having this anxiety come through my body. Anxiety is just fear energy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Unprocessed fear energy just like boom through my body. And at that time, I wanted to resist fear. It's like get this fear away from me, like numbing, self-medicating in one way or another, or even like, I didn't do this, but a lot of people go to the doctor, right, and get medication to feel less because it's too much. Everyone wants to get away from the fear. And what that comes from is a fear of fear. So that act of getting away from the fear just perpetuates the fear. It just makes it worse because nothing is transformed by fear. Everything is transformed by love. So if we're trying to push the fear away, it's going to get worse. So in my life now, it's like if fear is coming up through my body in one way or another, I welcome it.
Huh. Do you ask yourself what you're afraid of? I mean, do you have to be specific?
Well, in my life now, I'm not afraid of much, to be honest. I'm not afraid of much, but I feel a lot of collective fear, and I'm very, very attuned to different spaces and attuned mm-hmm. to the world. And sometimes I can just feel that pulse in my body, and I don't need to know what it is. I don't need to know where it comes from. But what I do is if I'm feeling any kind of fear energy, whether it relates to myself or someone else, it doesn't matter, because we're all one. We're all one. Well, and I just allow, and I just say, I allow this fear to be. And what I've done is I've loved it. By allowing, I've loved. And then something starts to change.
I have one more question. You talk about a collective fear. Okay, like what grips the world now. So how do you deal with that collectively? Or how does the collective deal with it?
Yeah, so as I know you guys know, the world, the distorted aspects of the world are orchestrated by some very dark, satanic individuals who work with black magic, who cast spells into the collective psyche.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's true, because these systems that are existing now, the economic system, the education system, the political system, it requires a collective humanity to be in a state of fear in order for it to work. Because a humanity rooted in love will rise up and take control and find their sovereign power. So there has to be a degree of fear in the collective in order for the hierarchical sort of slave system to exist. So that collective fear is being pushed through so many things as frequency. Like there is frequency attack coming through EMFs, coming through 5G, coming through popular music, coming through movies, even through kids' shows. You know, sometimes I see what they put in the kids' shows for four-year-olds, and it's very demonic. Does that need to be there?
Really? In kids' shows?
Yeah. In kids' shows, they're wanting the powers behind these industries want to push fear frequency into the collective. And because I am very psychic and my work is basically deeply rooted in entity clearing now, I can see these energies, and I can see entities, demons everywhere I look. I can see where people are living their life under some sort of hypnosis and control from projected fear-based forms.
Wow.
So what we need to realize is that love exposes everything. The reason in my retreats I end up seeing these entities like pretty much coming into our visual, like we can see them with our two eyes.
Jeez.
It's because the love is so big that it's exposed them. It's exposed them, and then the love transforms them. So what we're seeing now in the collective is the love is actually raising all these beautiful people on this earth, doing work on themselves, healing, meditating, like being kind, opening their hearts. The love is raising. So we are exposing what has been hidden. We are exposing demonic forces. And now, you know, I look at these world leaders, like the Israeli guy is just who comes to my mind. I can't even pronounce his name.
Yeah.
And I see his face, and I can see like a distortion on his face. I can see where there's something. He has a spirit, he has a soul, but that's not what's running the show. And I can see that aspect. And a lot of people can see that aspect in one way or another, because we're anchored in love. But then the important thing is the way that we do entity clearing, and we can all do it, is to see what we see without fear. To see these demons, these entities, and to recognize that these energies are birthed from trauma, from pain, from ancestral suffering. And when I see the evil that runs the world, and I see these like demons present in their face, I can also see into the pain, into the trauma, into the suffering. And it's like, I don't have compassion for these people's actions, but I see them. I see who they are, and I see what's taken over them. I see the suffering that their lineages have endured for them to be resonant with those evil actions. Jeez. And with an open heart, it's like, I see you. I see you. That's how I do entity clearing in a session. Huh. And that is how we purge this world of the demons that are running the show. It's not by being afraid of them, but by doing all the practices that we do to open our hearts and just to see into the depth of these demonic forces, that they are powerless and they are birthed from their own suffering and trauma.
Are you going to come to the States?
I want to take your sessions.
I want to come to the States. I do. It's in my, well, I know that I was on your site and I know you guys are tarot readers and I know that you guys are deeply connected to like your timelines and your future. And I know it's there, but I don't know what it is. So I'm coming.
Okay, just let us know.
Yeah.
All right, I will.
I have a question. Is it possible to transmute the collective fear by looking at our own shadow self? How does our own shadow come into the role?
Absolutely. Because what I'm describing, that fear that we see in the collective and in those world leaders, how can we keep our hearts open when we have that fear within ourselves?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
So then the first invitation is to look at that energy within ourselves and to heal our own traumas, to heal our own suffering and our own wounds. That's step one. What I described before is like the final step, you know, but step one is to look at our own shadows. Because when I speak about entities and demons, many people are afraid, like, what if this energy releases and comes and lands in my body. So we can only attract demonic presence into our body if there is resonance, you know, like the law of attraction. So if you have like dark thoughts, you know, self-harming thoughts, I'm not good, I'm this or that, if there is a projective frequency there, being projected at you like a psychic attack coming through the media, coming through music, coming through frequency, it will land where there's resonance in your body. But if you don't have those thoughts and your frequency is high, there's no resonance. You can be in the haunted house and not only will nothing touch you, but the presence of your light and your love will clean up the haunted house. So when we look at our own shadow, which is our traumas, our pains, our hurts, not just from this lifetime, but from previous lifetimes and from our ancestry, the more we do that, the more we become just pure channels of love and light. And then we can look at the face of external evil and feel no fear. And that is how we transform the world. It's, yeah, as you say, Rob, it does start with ourselves.
But now, do you do online courses also with this?
Yeah. Work? Yeah. So everything, I did a lot of retreats in the last couple of years. And I've got 2 kids, 6 and 4. So we spent the whole of last year in Bali. Aaron.
Nice for them.
With my husband. Nice for them, but also like a lot of time without their mummy, you know. So we're really grounded now and anchored and not traveling. So everything that I'm doing is online. So everything I'm describing with like this somatic clearing of your traumas, entity clearing and opening as pure channels, it's all in an online course that I do now, an online practitioner training. And it's amazing what we can create in the online space is what I'm realizing.
Yeah, there are people I have a trouble working with you.
You can tell we're not Australian.
Kind of a tongue twister.
You can call me what you like, Rob. It's okay. Rihanna.
Yeah. So I was going to say, there are people who just do these healings with different people over and over again, and they're kind of in a healing loop, stuck in a healing loop in a sense. Can you talk about that? I mean, you're aware of that, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll give you a little bit of a story, actually. So the way that we get into the root of whatever repeating pattern that we have is through the emotional pain body. Mm-hmm. So what I mean by the root is your soul could have come into this incarnation with a deep rooted pain of unworthiness. And it comes from a past life experience. And what you will do is you will come into this incarnation and you will magnetize towards you situations that make you feel that again, so that you can heal it. And it's also that you can heal it. So what I see a lot is that people keep working with the emotion, right? The self-worth, the worthlessness. For me, my root was shame, like a shame.
Huh.
And I kept magnetizing into my life things that would make me feel shame. So I was unfaithful on a partner, and the agony of the shame was enough to make me almost want to like end my life. The self-loathing and the shame was so bad. I was in a really dark place. That was like my early 20s, that like dark night of the soul. But I didn't get to the root of it. And then at my brother's wedding, I got really like messy with a lot of different alcohol and substances. And there was a lot of family shame. And then I was just like self-loathing, like, why did I do that? The shame. I was like, it's that exact same energy of what I experienced before, but a different scenario.
Uh-huh.
And one healer that I used to go to, who was very instrumental in my life, I went to her and she said, hey, Rihanna, you know, in your past life, you have a lot of shame. You were a victim of like ritual abuse. And there's a lot of shame energy there. And the whole session was not me feeling and processing the emotional shame, because I'd done so much of that. It was me reaching into the root of that lifetime where it all began.
Jeez.
And setting that root free. And this is how we do entity clearing. This is how we clear cycles. This is how we start a new beginning. It's not by just going into the emotional body, into the grief, into the anger. It's by going deeper and deeper. What I say is the realm within the realm of the grief. The deeper realm of the grief, the deeper and deeper and deeper realm of the grief, and we see the part where it all began. And when we can see that beginning, and like I said with entity clearing, it's like, I see you. I see this beginning. This is where it ends. The loop unhooks and freedom sets in. So when we're on this healing path, we have to feel our bodies. You know, we have to feel our emotions and cry through the grief and roar through the rage. But deeper than that, we have to fold inward to the root and recognize that root, and at a soul level, say, I'm done here. I'm done here.
Oh, wow. I set this Interesting.
Free. Yeah.
So were you able to see the past life where this originated?
Yeah, I see past lives for myself. I see past lives for my clients. I can see it all, because really there is no separation. Even the term past life, what is past, you know?
Yeah.
Future past, it's all the one. And everything is happening alongside us, and the veils are thin to non-existent. And we can see it all. It's all relevant to the now.
Hmm. Interesting. I love your perspective. I want to go to one of your sessions.
I want you to come. Great to have you.
I, I was wondering if the native people of Australia, the Aborigines, if there are any of them who teach shamanic workshops that open to everybody.
Do you know what, Rob? That's a really great question, and I hope that the answer is yes. But where I live now, I'm so deeply connected to the ancestors. There is a powerful energy here on this land. Mm-hmm. This land is called Margaret River, but the true name is Wadundibudja. And my only connection that I have to the true people of Australia is psychically.
Okay, my question was, do you teach all of this to your kids? And if so, how?
I do. I just, it's quite tricky.
I bet.
But the most important way that I bring this through to the kids is by validating their emotions, you know, because, you know, at the start we spoke about how we're trying to like fit ourselves into the societal box,
right.
And we do it all by basically denying our innate feelings within our body. So when we were at school, it's like, raise your hand to go to the bathroom, don't speak. And all our innate feelings are suppressed. And as parents, it's really intense having these emotional beings with no regulation, just like yelling at you. And of course, this is the fast track shadow work as being a mom, because it brings up all of my rage or anything that's there that needs to be processed. It's not the kid's fault. They're just triggering something within me that needs to be met. But when they have big emotions, which is fair enough, I try like so hard to not say like, shh, please stop crying. And it's just about like, okay, so tell me how you're feeling. And then I feel mad at you. It's like, oh, fair enough. Fair enough. Fair enough that you feel like that. And the four-year-old, it's pretty basic. What I do, it's basically just like asking them how they feel and letting it be. But with the six-year-old, something that I'm doing more of now is like when I go put her to bed at night, I always lay with her in bed. And sometimes she say, Mom, I feel scared. And then I'm just teaching her now. I'm just starting to now teach her about her heart energy and to talk about, you know, the love there and that you can't feel scared when you're in your heart. And then I ask her, like, can you feel that? And she's like, yeah, I can feel
that. Wow, that's great. Yeah.
You know, what you're saying just reminds me of our own daughter growing up. We lived in a different town at the time, and our house was right across the street from a playground. She'd be out there right across the street in the neighborhood with her friends. And, you know, more than a couple of times, I would hear her yelling at her friends, "You don't know how I feel." That was her theme, you know?
Yeah.
That's it. And they just want to be validated, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cute. Oh, I don't know if you can see the arms there. I'm so sorry, guys.
That's all right. No, that's fine.
Just give me one second again. This will be the last one, I think.
Okay.
It's great. So cute.
Okay, so we were talking about healing, and I'm wondering how your concept of intuitive rebirth differs from more traditional healing approaches.
Yeah, it differs a lot. It differs a lot. And in my heart, I'm a born rebel, because the people pleaser that I was really just a big cover up for the rebel that I truly am and my inability to follow direction. And
I love it.
And feel most people are actually that too. You know, there's a lot of people who are doing these healing modalities where they've been told what to do and something is just not feeling authentic. And there's so many powerful healing modalities out there, but all of them were channeled by one person. So it's the absolute truth for that one person. Mm-hmm. But every time they share that medicine with someone else as a very systemized approach, there's going to be aspects of that system that are very empowering and aspects that are disempowering because they're inauthentic. And all the while you're doing something as a healer that feels inauthentic, you're not moving fully from love. So the power of your magic is diluted.
Hmm.
So when I first started doing really deep healing work in my session spaces, what I did first and foremost was I psychically tuned into the person. And I debriefed them before they'd arrived. And I would ask to their higher self, you know, how may I serve you? Mm-hmm. How may I serve you for your deepest healing? Whatever is needed in this moment, just use me, you know, use me as a conduit. I'm here to serve. And then I would write down, and whatever would come through would always be completely different for each person. But whatever it was, I would do it. I would follow it like a roadmap, you know, to the T. And the session, every single session I did was completely different, but huge.
So you tailored it to the individual, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. It.
And it would be big. It would always be big because my intention was the deepest healing. Uh-huh. Whatever I can do, use me, use this hour, and I'll just do what you tell me.
Huh.
And then I realized that each session was like me psychically connecting. There was always a purge. And what I mean by that is like something to release, an old fear, a pain, an old wound, something in the field, like a distortion. There was always something to release. And then there was always something to remember, you know, once that that purge was gone, that self-limiting belief or that worthlessness, once that was kind of felt and released, maybe with big tears or a big wail, then there was something to remember, like a reclamation of a gift, a reclamation of a soul memory, so that the wholeness could come back in. And then because it was the intuitive aspect, the death and the rebirth, my husband came up with the name. I have to credit
That's
him
good.
Otherwise he won't let me get away with it. It's intuitive rebirth. So what I'm teaching to healers is that there's nothing that I know that can empower you more than what you already know from that space within. And that's the premise of the whole thing. Like there is a structure, but the structure is there to empower, take it or leave it, because the real magic happens in the purity of the intention, the purity of the connection to a higher orchestration. And then the trust to see it through, the self-belief as a healer to see it through. And that is it. So if you go on like the Instagram of Intuitive Rebirth and you're looking at the videos, there's big work, you know, that it looks like people having big releases and big cries, and people will reach out like, what is the technique? Like, what is the breathwork technique? What are you actually doing? The technique is love.
Huh.
Loving someone so much and trusting yourself to act upon that love.
Is this how you met your husband? Was he one of your clients? Somebody who came to you for a healing? Or
no, but my husband is a deeply spiritual man. And before this, I used to be a yoga teacher, and my whole life was yoga before kids. And we met in Bali at a yoga studio. He was a yogi too. Yeah. But now he's very involved in everything.
Uh-huh. Huh.
Yeah. We do it together.
Rob taught yoga for 30 years. So.
Yeah. So you get it.
Yeah, right.
Well, 30 years, you're a hell of a lot more experienced than I ever was.
So the people you're teaching now, healers, is there something you noticed about them, the new wave of healers that are coming out?
Yeah, I think the reason that so many people are resonating with intuitive rebirth and with what I'm sharing is that people can't bear to do anything anymore that feels inauthentic. You know,
that's a good point.
Yeah. And so because I'm not asking them, I'm not saying this is my way, do it this way, I'll go home. It's like, I see you, I see your power, I see your magic, I see your genius, and I believe in you. And that's the medicine, basically, in intuitive rebirth. And then people start to believe in themselves. And what I'm seeing in these healers, when everyone starts to really connect with their innate gifts, it reminds me of X-Men. Because everyone has their own superpower. And it's like that all of these healers, they came in as souls with these gifts. Like they've had these gifts lifetime after lifetime, just waiting for the moment for them to trust themselves enough to express these gifts. So some of these healers are like naturally shamanic and like picking up these medicine drums and singing these chants, and there's this ancient way about them. And other healers, you know, they're channeling multidimensional beings. They're speaking these light languages that I've never spoken. They're coming from a different realm, a different dimension. And one healer is attuning to that frequency, and another healer is somewhere completely different.
Yeah.
Offering two very different things. And so what I'm seeing about these healers now is they're just committed to their truth, and they want to serve, and they want to help humanity, and they want to do it on their terms.
So in a sense, powerful. So in a sense, you're awakening that part of them, your techniques and the way you approach all this.
Yeah. Like there's a framework, but the framework, it basically offers the left brain a comfortable sort of nice little box to say, I feel safe enough to flow.
Right.
Because if it's all airy fairy, then something happens where it doesn't land in the body. But when you satisfy the human part of us that wants a certificate, wants a system, wants to feel initiated,
right,
wants to feel like it's mastered some sort of skill set. When you appease that part of the human condition, but then awaken and welcome the true self, that's a very miraculous middle ground.
Interesting.
So the first half of your book is channeled. Do you work with a team of guides? How does that work for you? How do you write from guidance? Channeling.
Yeah. So I have it. I have a team, an infinite team, like an army, just as we all do. You guys have one hell of a team, you know. But everything is of the one. Everything is of the one. So just like the way I describe it is there's lots of radio stations, you know, you can tune the dial and go to different frequencies. But the radio stations, the radio itself, the radio frequency that holds it all and binds it all, everything is still of the one. So ultimately, my guidance comes from my God self, my highest aspect, my higher self, which is the one with your higher self, the one with the all that is. And there's nothing that we need to channel other than that space, source itself. Mm-hmm. And yet, just as the radio station, you can get bits of wisdom from that station. You can get bits of wisdom from that station. You want to ignore that station. You know, we can also attune to individualized consciousness in the astral spirit realm. And I just align to my highest and brightest guides, beings of light who are here to serve me and the collective for our highest good. And when I say that, I know it's all coming from the space, the beings that are completely resonant with pure love, with the divine. But I'm open to receiving individualized messages from different stations, and that's when you can tune in to, you know, galactic beings, to different realms, to elders, ancestors. But for the book, for this book, I really just allowed myself to align to the highest frequency of pure loving truth for the collective at this time.
Huh. That's fascinating.
How do you protect yourself from these demonic forces you're talking about?
I love that question. It's so good because it's not what you think it is.
Okay.
And what we've been taught about energy protection largely is distorted.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you've heard the saying, what we resist persists. Mm-hmm. What we resist persists. And fear breeds fear. Fear feeds fear. Mm-hmm. So let's say, like, you're in a hotel room and this hotel's a bit old and it's a bit weird. And you're in that, have you ever, you know, you stay at a hotel room and the hotel room feels off. And you can feel a presence in the room. And then traditional energy protection would say, well, I'm going to put myself in a shield or a ball or an orb or something. Mm-hmm. And so what we're doing is we're putting ourselves in this little ball of light and just feeling that everything beyond that shield is dark. Well, so that's an act of resistance. Resistance is an act of fear. So then what we do in that little ball of light is we're actually feeding the energy on the outside. The energy on the outside feeds off our fear, and resistance is fear. So love, the organic nature of you and I, alchemizes everything. In our true nature, we are love, and nothing can touch us. Nothing can harm us. So what I do is, if I'm ever feeling like there's a presence or something that I need to protect myself from, I go into the depths of my heart and I find that beautiful spark of light that is my divine God self. And I breathe into the beautiful energy of my heart.
Huh.
And I let my heart energy get huge. I get huge. And all of a sudden there is nothing else but my heart energy. My heart energy is this infinite light to the furthest reaches of all that is. And nothing can exist in my field. So not only can nothing touch me, but that anything that comes into my field is actually transformed. So my energy protection is that. And we can only do that if we continue to do the inner work, like your question earlier, Rob, the shadow work that allows us to recognize and feel and release all of our unresolved fears. So the greatest energy protection we can ever do is our own shadow work.
Mm. This when our daughter was young, she was maybe less than a year old, we went to Casadega, which is a community of psychics in Central Florida.
Spiritualists.
Yeah, spiritualists. And we were the only people in the hotel. And so we're getting ready for bed. Megan was already asleep on the other bed. And all of a sudden we hear this boot stomping on the floor coming up the stairs. And Rob and I looked at each other and thought, who is that? Because the hotel's empty. Well, these stomping boots came down the hall, grabbed the handle of our room, of the door, started shaking it. So Rob and I start pushing the dresser in front of the door, like, you know, that's going to block something. But, I mean, nothing happened. You know, I mean, we got scared.
Mm.
But there was nothing happened.
Yeah. And, you know, we've had spirit contact that has been very, you know, uplifting, but this was the opposite of that. Mm-hmm. This was dark. Yeah. I mean, I put my hand on that door handle and there was no way I was going to open that door to see who was out there.
Yeah. Wow. That's scary. And when things like that happen, it just is such an intense reminder that the world is not what we think it is.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's an intense story. It's always in hotels.
Yeah, it is. That's true. And the next day I said to the person at the desk, I said, hey, is this hotel haunted? Oh yeah, we've got friendly ghosts. I said, not last night. Yeah. That was not a friendly ghost.
Yeah. I'm not sure that was human. Actually, it might've been some kind of inorganic being that was,
ghosts aren't human. I mean, ghosts are their own.
But also, because you guys are, you know, you're light beings, all the work that you're doing, a lot of these beings, they want help. They want help. They want to be released. They don't want to be stuck in the astral world, walking the hallways of the hotel. They want to be freed back to source, back to liberation. And so a lot of these beings are attracted to your light and your love because you have the power to set them free.
I hadn't even thought of that, but that's maybe that's why I wanted in.
And I'm going full cold chills because if it ever happens again, or if anyone listening to this ever happens, it's like if you can just change your perspective to meet this being stuck in the astral through the lens of compassion and curiosity. Like, is there something you need from me? You know?
Interesting.
And then you can literally open your heart. And what I described before, it's like, I see you. So when I say I see you, it's like when you open the lens of compassion and curiosity, you start to see that there was probably a trauma that locked this spirit into the house. Mm-hmm. You start to see that there was a fear or a pain that stopped this person from ascending in death. And when you see that suffering and that pain, you see the truth. And with an open heart, it's that act of love. That's how you set them free. They'll be done. They'll be freed.
Or they, I hate to say it, but the entity could enter you too.
Well, but not if you're doing it the way she's describing, though.
It can't enter you if you're in love, Rob, because it's not resonance. There has to be resonance. It's like the law of attraction.
Right.
And that's why when you go like through the cities and you see all the homeless folk and you see some people who are out of their mind and you can see there's demonic possession, that's the easiest place to see it. Yeah. It's because their thought form is so dark. They're thinking such dark thoughts. They're probably a lot of these people on drugs and alcohol, lowering their vibration. So they're resonant.
Right. Okay.
But you are a light being, so there's no resonance.
Oh, that's when probably you're in why I fear, walked away.
Yeah, but if you get in a super dark place of fear and you start running thoughts, this is going to kill me. This is going to come in my body. Right. This is going to mess me up. If you start to have these dark thought forms, all of a sudden there is resonance.
So you don't want the resonance.
Yeah. And you just get that by being like, nothing can nothing can harm me. I'm the light that alchemizes all things. That's my mantra in those sorts of situations. Mm. I'm the light that alchemizes all things.
I like that.
So we're coming to the end of our hour. What's the message or practice you hope every listener walks away with? Something they can...
And tell us where they could get in touch with you, too.
Yeah, my message that I would love to leave everybody with is to not underestimate the power of the most simple practice in the world, which is just to connect to your heart energy. Mm-hmm. And if there's a practice or a teaching that I can give that will change not only everyone's life on an individual level, but the world, it's just to go get your feet on the earth. Go sit somewhere that makes you feel like the earth is beautiful. And just to see if you can attune to the energy that opens your heart when you look at the trees or the clouds. And just breathe into everything in your life that makes you feel good. And just to amplify that energy in your heart with your breath. And when you recognize that and you attune to that, to do it as often as you can remember. And that will be like a medicine that ripples all through your life and into your family, and into your community, and it will change. It will change your existence. And where people can find
you? Okay, tell people about your website.
Yeah, so if you'd like to come and train with me, then come to intuitiverebirth.com and you can see the practitioner training. And there's a 10% discount for all of your listeners at the checkout if you use the code community. And yeah, you can also check out my book. The latest one is The Intuitive Rebirth, and you can actually get a free copy of the ebook. There's a link that I'm not sure if I gave it to you guys. There's a link that maybe I could send it to you to put in the
show notes. Yeah, that's fine.
Where you can download a free copy of the PDF of The Intuitive Rebirth, or you can... Just grab the hard copy anywhere online.
Okay. Oh, this has been so great.
Yeah, it's great.
I want to come to Australia and do this in person.
Yeah, I want to come to the U.S.
Yes.
Deeply.
And you can bring your kids.
Yeah, well, they come everywhere.
You're on the other side of the world, yet you're close by.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, thank you guys so much for having
thank
me.
Thank you. It's really beautiful. Terrific.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you guys so much.
Thanks for joining The Mystical Underground. Visit www.themysticalunderground.com for the latest blog post and book info. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or your favorite podcast app. Listen to the podcast at podcast.themysticalunderground.com. Follow Trish and Rob on Instagram at Trish and Rob McGregor. Follow us on Twitter at The Mystic Cast. Send email to podcast@themysticalunderground.com. And until next week, thank you for listening and stay mystical.
What a cutie. She's adorable.
I just saw her for a second.
Do you mind if I pause for 1 minute?
No, that's fine.